Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Roman, I have a very important question. How do you make your pickup truck last the longest and the healthiest?
Dude, I have no clue. I mean, you know me, I keep a truck for like 3 months. How would I know? You're the one who keeps your trucks forever. So that, how would I know?
That is true. But we have an answer on this show, okay. On this podcast. Yeah. Because Case, our buddy Case, he did a very detailed, very great interview with Ram Truck Chief Engineer Doug Killian. So in this show, at near the end of the show, we can actually play that video for you and you could listen to it. And they discussed many topics, how to best cold start your truck in the wintertime. I mean, this is still February and March, some of the coldest months.
Isn't he a diesel dude?
Yes.
So you're talking about diesels as well, huh?
Yeah, but Doug does all Ram trucks, actually. Okay. Everything that has to do with the frame. So they discussed diesels, the Cummins engine, the new Cummins that's coming. They talked about the Hurricane engines. And they have some really interesting tips, pro tips.
You know, I love when we get to interview kind of the industry experts because you guys send us a lot of questions that dealers should be able to answer, but for some reason they can't. And then this is your opportunity to listen to the guys and gals who actually build and design these trucks.
Develop and test them.
Yeah. So this is as close to the wellspring of knowledge.
And like, for example, if your neighbor says one thing and your relative says another, I mean, hopefully Doug can actually set it straight and give it to you.
I used to listen to Car Talk and I think they advocated like pouring eggs into the radiator or something.
To plug the hole?
Yeah,
sure.
So that's how old my information is, Andre. You don't want me.
Please don't pour eggs into your radiator.
Giving advice. No, especially now with the price of eggs. It'd be cheaper to pour gold in there, my God.
Wow.
All right, so.
How about this?
Yeah.
How about this? How about we do some rapid fire truck news?
There's been a lot of truck news.
Yes.
Usually there's not a lot of truck news, but there's been a lot of truck news. All right, let's go for it. What do you got there on your list?
So just a couple of days ago, this rumor came out based on information from a supplier to Ford that they're delaying the life cycle or the development cycle of the next F-150 by at least a year.
And they've never done that, have they?
Not recently.
That's pretty new.
So if you look back at least 10 years, maybe even more, F-150 release cycle was basically update every 3 years and a new generation every 6 years. So for them to shift it and delay it, it's kind of a big deal. But Ford has not specified, they had no comment on this.
You asked them actually.
I asked Ford
and
said.
And that is a TFL difference. All those YouTubers out there who are speculating on stuff, we go and ask and get a non-answer.
We don't have any answers. No.
At least we ask.
No, but here's the thing. Because it's looking into like 3 years into the future, basically.
They said they won't comment on new products.
Yeah, because it's a little bit too far.
All right, but he's been the only executive that has said that if the Trump administration tariffs come into play, and I think I'm paraphrasing here, but he said it will blow a hole in the car industry.
And are you talking about Jim Farley?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry, Jim Farley. I should have made that clear. So Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, said that if these, and as you know, Trump proposed a 25% tariff
on Canadian products
and Mexican products. And then he put it on hold until April. But this week he actually said that he's still going forward with that. Because he believes that tariffs are his favorite words. Now, in our experience, Andre, and we've been doing this, like I said, for 15 years, this is a very global industry. And what will happen is, and I think most economists will agree with this, and, you know, really don't care what side of the political fence you're on, there are some truths because people have tried tariffs before. It's basically a tax that gets passed on to the consumer. And so the manufacturer usually can try to absorb some of it, but I've heard, I've read, I've kind of talked to many insiders who say that, like, from the manufacturer point, the average profit in an automobile or truck is about 17%.
And sometimes less.
And sometimes less. Yeah. So if you pass a 25% tariff, especially if that includes things like the powertrain, because sometimes, because it's such a global industry, not only is the truck not built in America, it is assembled maybe in America.
Yeah.
The parts still come from around the world. So it's not uncommon for engines, transmissions to come from Canada or Mexico or Europe.
Wiring harnesses, seats,
yeah,
anything.
And we found that, we found this out in the COVID moments or years, that when you miss one part, all it takes is one part of a vehicle, you can't sell it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an important part, right? You can't sell a truck without a door handle.
Or a mirror, maybe, because it's regulation. You have to comply with all the rules.
Yeah, or in the case of, you know, the chip shortage, a chip. And so this idea that what you can do is you can move all of manufacturing of vehicles to America is doable, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen in a year or two. Right? This is, it takes a long time to build a car or truck factory. And it takes a long time to get all the suppliers in place, to get all the parts in place so that you can take these thousands of parts, you know, on one end, and then an F-150 comes out the other end. And so I have
For big manufacturers who built millions of these things a year, which is like Ford and GM and others, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, and I have no doubt that if you place a 25% tariff on anything, truck prices are going to go up by at least 20% or more. And the people who are going to pay for it is you and me. That's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
And then the question, this is another thing we have on here, what happens to used truck values?
Exactly. So if the new truck goes up, which it could.
Which it could. Let's say the new truck. Let's be generous and say that a $50,000 truck now costs 15% more. So how much would that be? You're the mathematician.
Well, how about, let's keep it easy, 10.
Okay.
So a $50,000 pickup truck now is 55.
Okay.
So a $60,000 pickup truck is now 66.
Okay. What will that do to used truck prices? Well, this has also happened.
People will go to the used market because, you know, the new market is moving up. And if there's more demand in the used market, the used value will go up.
Yeah. And this is exactly what happened during COVID, right? When there was not enough supply and too much demand, then the used car, in this case, truck prices and values follow the new prices and values. So if new trucks go up 10%, used vehicles are going to go up 10%. And that could be good or bad. I mean, if you have a used truck, then that could be worth, you know, 10% more. But if you want to buy a new truck, you're going to have to pay 10% less. So it's kind of a wash.
Yeah. And I want to just make another comment about this whole, you know, international tariff thing. I recently did a review of an F-250, which was modified, right? This was a camper truck.
Yeah.
And what I loved about it the most is that almost all the components you could see on that truck, including the suspension, the new bed, the camper itself, like the hitch accessories, were actually built and produced and made in Colorado or United States. And I could feel, you know, and
pride?
Pride in that.
Yeah, I understand.
And I'm totally for that. And we are, I think, totally for that. But you could draw a direct line between that particular truck and, for example, in Golden, Colorado, there is a Superchamp camper company. And in Denver, Colorado, there is a company that builds beds. And there's in California that builds suspensions. And you could really feel pride in that.
So I'm going to give you a funny, I think I'm saying this right. So in Star Trek, there's a group of aliens called the Ferengi.
Okay.
And there's a Ferengi rules of acquisition. Right?
Okay.
And one of the rules, and I don't know what number it is like a pride in a sack is worth the sack.
Okay.
And why I'm saying that is yeah, sure, you can move production over here, but, you know, American workers make a lot more money than workers abroad. And that, once again, is going to go into the price of the vehicle. So you could take a lot of pride in the fact that the vehicles are built here, but they're going to go up substantially because American workers make a lot more. So we got, when I first did the story, two things happened. We got a bunch of emails from people, you know, saying, don't go political on us. But we're not going political. I mean, it's the administration that's going political. This
affects our business directly.
Yeah, this is what we do. I mean, we talk about trucks.
And we buy trucks.
Yeah.
And we drive them.
This is not political. This is our real world life because we buy a lot of trucks. We test a lot of trucks. We give consumer advice. Anyway, so two things. We got an email from one of the workers at the Mexico factory who builds, I forget what the vehicle, it was Mavericks. Builds Mavericks, down there, right? And he said that he makes $400 a week. And I didn't, you know, confirm this, but it feels right. So how much is that a month? That's 400 times.
1,600.
I would wager that the American worker makes that in a week, the 1,600 or more.
Probably likely. More. Well, if it's 1,600 a month times 12, that's what, 30,000 a year?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I bet you American workers make like 30 to 50 an hour.
Or, yeah, yeah.
Or more.
So, yeah.
Or more. So I would say that's at least half, if not more than. So if a company has to pay American workers twice as much to build a truck, where do you think that is going to get passed on to?
Yes.
And then the other one I got, which is also interesting, we had another email from a line worker at the Cleveland, Ohio, I think it's Cleveland, isn't it, where Wranglers are made? Is that?
And Gladiators, yeah.
And Gladiators, yeah.
Toledo?
Toledo, yeah, Toledo, yeah. And he said that every part that they put on that Wrangler says made in Canada.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
And here's what happened, because, you know, NAFTA... We're spending way too much time on this. NAFTA has been around for like 3+ decades.
Yeah.
Right. And it's almost like a truck now is like you're weaving a carpet, and every strand in that carpet is a different part. And those parts come from all over the place.
North American Free Trade Agreement.
Yeah. So if you change the rules or where those strands come from, it's a big deal because you still have to make the carpet in this analogy.
And then,
anyways,
One last thing before we kill this topic. And that is, there's a lot of small manufacturers that will not survive a 25% tariff.
And I'm worried. What happens to the company that builds campers here? What happens to the company that builds suspensions or beds? If there are fewer people willing to spend the money, fewer people buying trucks, it affects them the most.
Yeah, and what I meant by small manufacturers, I'm not talking about small vehicle manufacturers. I'm talking about small parts manufacturers, right? There's a saying that for every one job that the auto industry creates, there are seven others. And I believe that, right? Because most of, like I said, car building today and truck building is assembly, and much of the parts come from suppliers. And there's a lot of small suppliers, and that supply chain is long and deep. And if you start increasing the price by 25%, a lot of those smaller companies don't have the resources to stay in business. And then what happens?
Yeah.
It's just this vicious circle, right? Prices just keep going up and up. Anyway, we've killed this enough. What's our next topic of news, Andre?
Well, really quick, because there was a separate story that we did about this, but Ram doubled down on the Ram Charger. Mm-hmm. So the Ram Charger is their EREV, which basically is a term for electric or range extended electric vehicle, basically. And it's exciting, and it's coming in the second half of this year. And I'm really interested in it. I think we should actually buy it for long term. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
Because here's the concept of it, right? It
has a smallish
battery. It has a V6 generator that creates energy, doesn't move the truck, but creates energy for the battery. It has two electric motors. So the whole system is quite complex, but it allows up to about 690 miles of total driving range. So it could go around town 145 miles on all electric mode and an additional 545 miles in gasoline.
Have they announced pricing yet before we jump on that bandwagon?
No.
I think it's going to be expensive. We already got a reservation down on a Scout pickup, which is the same thing. Harvester, initial Harvester Scout.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. The new Harvester range extender.
But that's like 2027.
That's out a couple of years. Yeah. So this one is coming, but I'm thinking it's going to be expensive because now you've got two powertrains, right? You've got a battery and an internal combustion engine.
So
that can't be cheap.
You were out at an event, but Zach and I, we put our heads together, producer Zach, and we thought that the Ram Charger, the range extended truck, could start at about $70,000. What do you think?
Start.
For a base one, like a work version of it.
I think that's realistic. I think that they'll
be optimistic.
No, realistic, but I think that there'll be a first edition that'll be 90, and that's the one we'd have to buy.
And I think we would have to wait.
Yeah, but then by the time we wait, other people would have bought it, and then nobody would care about
it. Why does it happen like this?
It's kind of a catch-22. We got to get the first edition, right? We had to buy the first edition ID Buzz.
Yes, most expensive one.
So we used to say, and Andrew brought this up in our staff meeting today, we saw it first on the Fast Lane. And
We
want to be first, and that means we have to pay a premium to do that. And then, as is the case, again, we take a big loss selling it. So we just sold our ID Buzz. We bought it for $72,000, and we sold it for $61,000 back to Volkswagen of Reading, I believe.
Yeah.
So if you want it, it's there.
Garnett Auto.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys are great. Paul Steve, the manager, wonderful man.
Garnett Auto.
Garnett Auto Group, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be available.
And I think we got lucky because a lot of ID Buzzes are actually going down in price even further than what we did. So
yeah, EVs are just it's spiraling into oblivion. It's a good time to buy a used EV.
Yeah. Or lease.
No, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
or lease a new EV or buy a used EV.
Or lease a new one because the lease deals are great. And then, you know, don't buy it at the end of the lease because the residuals are going to be through the floor.
All right. A little bit more news before we get to that important interview.
Yeah.
Right. So we currently have on loan from Toyota, the Tundra Rally Edition, which is the new edition.
So what's the, where, when, why? Okay.
It's called the TRD Rally. So, you know, the TRD is Toyota Racing Development, right?
Okay.
So they have a wide range of offerings. So in the Tundra, they used to have the TRD Sport, TRD Off-Road, and Off-Road Premium, TRD Pro, and now TRD Rally, which is kind of a cross of TRD Off-Road with a little bit more style. That's how I would explain it.
Okay, so it slots below the TRD Pro.
But above the TRD Off-Road.
Ah, okay.
That's how I would put it. Because it's still a four-wheel drive truck. Can you wave over there? Just wave your hand.
I'm waving, Andre.
There you go.
Okay.
Our studio timer timed out. So it's not a pro, so because it doesn't have a lift, it doesn't have the fancy, you know, Fox suspension. It has the Bilstein suspension, very similar to the TRD Off-Road models, but it has a very luxurious interior. So you've got Softex, you know, heated seats. You've got a really nice steering wheel, heated steering wheel. You've got the big screen. You have all the technology. You have multi-terrain select and crawl control.
So we are going to do a video with it. What are your plans for it?
So it's kind of the new, I would put it very close. Oh, it has a rear locker too.
Sweet.
I would put it kind of on par with the older TRD Pro because the older TRD Pros
didn't have a locker.
Okay,
I'm giving you a hard time.
No, it's okay. It's not me. I mean, I do own one. But I want to do old versus new.
So you went from no cruise control to no locker.
That's my life.
That's just you had a locker on the canyon, no, on the Colorado, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you seem to be like always like.
But I do have adaptive cruise control now. It's adaptive.
Yes. Good for you.
So because these trucks are kind of similar in their character, I mean, they're both off-road versions of the Tundra, and one has a twin turbo V6, and the other one has a V8. So I want to do old versus new.
Okay.
Just a comparison between them.
So that is coming soon. Head on over to alltfl.com.
Yes.
And many.
But I have one more question about the Tundra.
Yeah, what is that?
Where is the Trail Hunter, that beefy overland truck that we all want?
Yeah, good
Where
question.
Where is the Tundra Trail Hunter?
I remember I was at CES, I think.
No, that was SEMA.
Was it SEMA?
Yes. They announced the Tundra.
Well, it was Vegas then.
It
was in Vegas. Give me that.
Yes.
And they announced the Tundra, and they had a Trail Hunter version of it. Remember? Yes. It was all like graphiced up.
Yes. And it had steel bumpers. It had a lift. It had tow hooks hanging down. Winches.
Yeah. All the stuff like that we've been giving Toyota crap about. And then the Tacoma Trail Hunter came out.
Yeah.
And now
which is pretty nice. Now
the 400 Trail Hunter came out.
But where's the Tundra Trail Hunter?
Toyota, where is the Tundra Trail Hunter? Where is it?
We don't know.
TFL Minds want to know. I'm going to guess. I'm going to take a guess. I think that was a concept that was previewing the Taco and the 4Runner Trail Hunter. And I don't think that they had the like
pre-development.
Yeah, the pre-development work to actually, because they still, let me ask you this. Does this rally have recovery hooks in the front?
It does not.
See, that's the problem. They don't have the... And you can't do a Trail Hunter without recovery hooks. I mean, you would just get roasted alive.
And also, what I dislike about actually the new Pro, the TRD Pro Tundra, and the Rally Edition also, is that plastic bumper covers.
Well, I know. Right? We broke ours. Remember?
It's very easy to...
Did you see how I said we?
We? You were driving.
It was me.
Yes.
I broke it.
So, and when you're talking about a tough off-road pickup truck... Just put some tough steel bumpers on it.
Yeah,
with good approach angles.
I think Ford figured that out a long time ago.
Yes,
remember when they brought over the Ranger, like the not the current Ranger, the previous Ranger? We were like, you just brought over the European Ranger and Australian Ranger, and they were like, no, it's completely different.
American.
And we were like, how is it different? And they were like,
steel bumpers.
And we're like, wait,
nice.
So you switched the bumpers from plastic to steel? Oh no, it's completely new.
Yes, but they did do that. They did put steel bumpers on it.
All right, what else is in the news, my man?
Well, Rivian.
Oh, yes.
Rivian
told a profit.
Yes.
Dang. First time ever.
You know, it's really a big deal for a startup company, especially with the scale that they're trying to achieve.
It only took them, what, 10 years?
Well, no, sorry, no, Rivian.
Well, they were around a long time.
I know. Before they actually announced their vehicle, they were around for many years before that. Yes. So you are right, kind of.
But I don't mean to take
the wind out of this.
As the British would say, take the piss off. But they have done, you know, a great job at actually posting a profit. And I wonder, here's my question, Andre. Is that because, or is it too early to say? But I don't think it's too early. I think the Cybertruck has flopped, right? It's flopping it's flopped.
Well, if you're looking at its lease deals and its pricing right now on the Cybertruck, they're having trouble selling the Cybertruck.
Yeah, so it's not doing well. And so... those buyers who want an electric truck, I think...
could go to Rivian.
Yeah, I think. Sure. I mean, look, I kind of feel like if you're going to get an electric truck and you're coming out of like an F-150 or a Silverado, you're probably going to go get a Lightning or a Silverado EV. But if you're kind of electric curious and you're a truck buyer, then like Tesla or Rivian are where you turn. And with the Cybertruck being bought by every YouTuber who wanted one...
Which was us.
We sold that just in time. Oh, my God. We got out of that thing.
Dodged the bullet.
Yeah, we dodged a bullet with that guy. So I feel like everybody who wanted one got one. And now people, you know, don't want to be associated with the brand. We just did a video with Tommy asking the question, is Tesla toxic? I won't go into it. But I think the conclusion is to a lot of people, it is toxic.
But it's also unconventional. If you look at the Cybertruck, you know, it has the wedge shape. It's polarizing, just the shape of it itself.
Yeah, so but that could be a winner-winner. That doesn't have to be, you know?
No, but if you're a more traditional person, the Rivian looks very traditional. You know, if you look at the Rivian, it has the three, you know, it has the hood area, it has the cab, and it has the bed.
So it's right there. It's a traditional three-box design as opposed to the pyramid of trucks.
Which is the Cybertruck.
So I'm wondering if, like, the people who were, you know, Cybertruck curious decided that now the Tesla – The CEO has kind of gone off the rails to a lot of people because he's no longer minding the shop, but he's busy, you know, firing people, which is never a popular thing to do, especially if those people own Teslas or are thinking about buying a Tesla. I don't think you're going to go buy a Tesla from the guy who fired you. So I wonder if that's going to, you know, help the sales of the Silverado EV and of the Rivian
and the Lightnings. Lightning.
Yeah, I wonder if that'll actually push.
Well, we'll have to wait and see because the final data, the first quarter data will be announced early April.
Yeah.
So we still have to wait about a month to really learn a lot of detail about this.
But okay. All right. What's next?
So first I want to go here. So the Canoe is dead.
There's a lot of dead brands. This
happened a couple of weeks ago, several weeks ago, but I did lose money. Well, I already talked about this, so I won.
Did you put a deposit down?
I had two deposits.
So you had $200 down, huh?
Yeah.
You should have just gone and bet that money in Vegas instead.
I sent them an email and I said, can I have my reservation money back?
And they said.
And I heard nothing.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's a bad sign.
It's okay. I knew I may never see that money ever again.
So you were doing that as a
I wanted to be first.
Mad money.
Yes, money.
Mad money.
So Canoe is dead. Nikola is dead.
So yeah, I mean, let's talk about Canoe first. So for all of you who aren't aware, because a lot of people don't know what Canoe is, of course, in the typical like startup car company fashion, they couldn't spell it the traditional way, right? You had to put an O in there. Right, it's Knoo.
Yes, it's two O's.
Two O's. Got to add more consonants. Get rid of vowels. Right, if you're a startup in the tech space. So that was already funny. And then instead of like having traditional seating in that thing, it was like a giant train in a way. Right, train cars.
Well, they came out with like the bubble van.
Right, so you would sit across from each other, and then you had this
like a lounge.
Yeah, like a lounge. And I gotta say, I think they kind of look pretty good in some ways.
Well, it reminded me of the Buhanka van,
which
sold me immediately because it was an efficient use of space. It's like a cab over design where you're sitting on top of the front wheels. And then they came out with a pickup truck version of it, too.
You know what these companies are figuring out?
What?
That selling cars isn't as hard as building cars because they sold you.
They sold me, but they didn't build anything.
Exactly. So selling cars, at least the idea of cars, is not as hard as building cars, or in this case, trucks and vans. Yeah, and let's go back to Nikola. So with Nikola, as you know, that was Trevor Milton, who's spending time in jail.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that thing ended the way it began, which was as a scam.
So, well, unfortunately, there was a lot of good people involved. After the scandal.
Yeah, our friend Dan. Good luck, Dan. I heard you started a consulting rig. So
Dan Pass, yeah.
I hope you do well.
And, you know, I was at their factory. I saw the passion in Arizona, right, that the workers had there. And they were building. They built 300 semi-trucks
at that factory. Hold on. So first of all, let's go back in time. So okay. when Trevor was still there, basically he built a truck that then said there was a working prototype, which he rolled down a hill.
Which wasn't a working prototype.
Which had no powertrain.
Yeah.
So it was just a truck that he rolled down the hill and, you know, basically stole a lot of money from a lot of investors.
Yeah, basically that was, that's
duped
why.
Duped a lot of investors.
Yeah, duped them and fraud case was opened and he
was punished. But the company kept going.
The company kept going and with different management.
And the initial thought on Nikola, if I remember right, was that it wasn't going to be an electric truck company like Tesla. It was going to be a hydrogen company. And what happened to that? What happened to the old hydrogen thing? Did that somewhere get lost?
No. I mean, the hydrogen fuel cell is still at the core of their design.
Okay.
But they also wanted to build out the infrastructure, right? So the infrastructure, they had the, I think HYLA, they called it a HYLA business, H-Y-L-A. And
what does that stand for?
It's their hydrogen business, basically mobile hydrogen fueling stations and also static ones, you know, giant truck stops.
All right, let me put that in perspective. Hydrogen. Okay. So what?
Like a Tesla model.
Right, but Tesla actually built superchargers.
And they've built several trailers, which were mobile hydrogen fueling devices.
That's hilarious.
Like a semi-trailer, you know, a giant 50-foot trailer.
Yeah, so you're going to have these trucks running around with no way to fuel them unless you have a truck that maybe is running on diesel, pull a giant trailer of hydrogen. I mean, it's bad shit, you know what? Sorry, bad, you know what? Crazy.
You have to start small, but you have to walk before you run,
wait,
Roman.
Wait, so we're going to build the hydrogen trucks, but there is no hydrogen network in the country. So what we'll do is we'll get giant semis full of hydrogen, which we'll station somewhere.
So when along the way, when so these, you can come up when these and
hydrogen,
fill up.
When these hydrogen trucks, right, come by.
Yeah, you could fill them up.
I mean, when they started the trains, right, they had to have water because... But it wasn't the fuel that ran it. It was just something that kept the boiler
running. Yes.
But it was, I mean, it was like.
So, Roman. So
I get it.
The company is done. Yeah. So the concept didn't pan out.
No.
They're declared bankruptcy. They're selling all their assets. They hope to sell them in April. But the whole idea was.
Did they actually have trucks that ran on hydrogen?
Yeah. And most of them ran at ports. So, for example, the port of Los Angeles has a hydrogen refueling capability. Toyota is working on that at the same port, actually. So they had trucks running at ports, you know, short distances. They also had all electric versions. So they had two versions of this semi truck. I drove one. I was there. I drove one. It drove wonderfully. It was so easy, very quiet, very comfortable, and it's dead. You know why? Because a lot of them cost triple what a diesel semi truck would cost. Triple. And a lot of that difference in price was subsidized by government grants, right? But if the government grants are not there, you can't subsidize it, the cost of those hydrogen trucks.
I still can't get past the fact that there was no hydrogen infrastructure and they built a truck that runs on hydrogen. Now, I get, let's say Tesla had never built out the superchargers.
Right.
You could still charge them at home.
Yes.
But you can't, you know, like... fill up your hydrogen truck
at home. Exactly.
Or at whatever depot these guys stop at.
So exactly.
It seems like a flawed business idea that was, you know, that was not going to go anywhere.
I have more news.
Go for it.
There is a new Mack semi truck coming. All new.
Are you going to get to drive it?
Maybe.
Ooh, that'd be exciting.
I have a CDL.
Nice.
So this is so secretive. This is like a month away. Still,
yeah.
A little bit more than a month, that I don't even know a name of this new Mack truck.
Okay.
Mack, M-A-C-K.
Yeah, the traditional big rigs.
You know they're celebrating 125 years of their company?
Cool.
So
they've got the bulldog on the nose.
They've got the bulldog.
Yeah,
that's so cool. That's coming, and I'm hoping to drive it.
Wonderful. Wait, what else you got there? Titan.
Well, do we really need to talk about this?
Titan is still dead.
Let's move on. Let's move on.
Oh, too soon?
Yes. This is painful.
Why did the Titan die? Give me one big reason why the Titan, because a lot of people
had a lot of people
bought Titans and they love their Titans.
My neighbor has a Titan.
Yeah.
Yes. He loves it.
So why was it not competitive with the other big three in the, you know, full-size truck world?
That's, you know... I think there may be a disconnect between the HQ in Japan and what we, you know, are seeing here in America. There may have been some disconnect.
Was that the main reason?
But the Titan was always good at a lot of things, but not great at any one thing.
Okay.
It was always...
Jack of all trades, master of none?
Yes. So it never had that, you know, I tow the most, or I have the most payload, or I'm the most efficient, or I'm the quickest. It never had a headline, you know, just a giant grabbing headline. It was always good at many things, but not great.
I would say that it had one headline. It was the cheapest in a lot of ways of the big ones.
Yeah, in a way.
Because Nissan's always been the value brand. I think the biggest reason the Titan died was it was always one generation behind. And it's kind of the same way that the Frontier is one generation behind, right? Every mid-sized truck has gone to a four-cylinder turbo. Well, not every. I mean, the Gladiator still is six.
And Gladiator's not doing so hot either.
Gladiator's not selling. And so the two six-cylinders, which, and I know every time we do a video on the Tacoma or the Canyon or Colorado or Ranger, everybody's like, oh, we don't want the four-cylinder. And yet they're the ones that are selling. And the ones that aren't are the Gladiator and the Frontier.
But I think the Frontier is still doing well. And I'm really hoping Frontier will continue to improve and do really, really well. And Frontier is just kind of the little truck that could.
I like the Frontier.
You know, very simple.
I like the Frontier a lot.
Very simple and very great.
Yeah, yeah. It's an honest truck, which is one of the highest compliments I could give a truck.
When are we going to get to the interview?
In a sec. So what's the last bit of news there? This is a head scratcher.
I'm still in shock that Ford is the only – well, not the only – Ford and Hyundai are the only companies selling a compact pickup in the United States.
Yeah, dude, where's the Stout, the Toyota version of that?
Where is the Chevy, you name it, Montana?
Yeah.
Where is the Ram Baby Dakota?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have one of those, right? They have it in other markets.
They have it in other countries.
They have
Brazil has all those vehicles.
Yeah.
It's still shocking that we don't have other compact trucks.
Ford is selling them like hotcakes. I'm talking about the Maverick now. Mm-hmm. And they have done so for like, they've even had
the last
to like
3 years.
Increase production, right? Because it's been such a successful truck. And the reason it's been successful is because it's, and I'm using air quotes here, guys, so don't flame me. It's affordable-ish.
Yeah.
Used to be affordable-ish.
Yes.
It fills a lot of basic truck needs because every truck in every generation has gotten bigger. And so now they're hard to park, they're hard to drive. And now you've got this little tiny truck that, you know, can easily haul four, maybe five in a pinch, has enough bed for a lot of, and people, you know what, when I did my Maverick update, everybody said I should compare it to the Ridgeline. Why do you think that is? Because the Ridgeline is a mid-size truck.
Yeah, but they don't have a separation between the bed and the cab, so they're kind of unibody design-ish.
True that.
Both of them are.
But you think people think that you think people cross-chop the Ridgeline with the Maverick? Because they're obviously...
The Ridgeline is one size bigger.
It's bigger. It's a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Go sit in the back of a Maverick and sit in the back of a Ridgeline, and you'll immediately know.
Yeah.
And the bed's bigger, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know why people think that, but I think they think that both of them are kind of unibody designs, and I think that's why they want to see them together.
I think also a lot of traditional truck buyers associate the Maverick as not being a truck because it's built on an Escape platform.
They make fun of us.
Yeah, they make fun of us, yeah.
Yeah.
And Ford...
It has a bed. It's a pickup truck.
And Ford has told us that they're trying to get car buyers as conquest sales as opposed to truck buyers. Now, we've taken that gauntlet that they threw down and picked it up by giving it to Mary. What's she doing? Our Mary, not Mary Barra, by the way. Our Mary.
Our very own Mary.
Yeah.
She's reviewing it. She's spending a week with it. And I cannot wait to see this video.
She's not a truck gal, let alone a car gal.
No, and she took up this task. She wants to see if she likes or hates the Maverick.
Yeah, so we'll get a kind of an interesting review from somebody who's not a truck person as to whether this is something that they would actually buy and whether Ford's barking up the right tree by trying to sell it to car buyers. All right, I think we've kept our audience waiting long enough. Where are we going to be talking about next in this interview?
So, especially in cold climates, cold weather, how can you treat your truck nicer? How can you make it last longer and healthier? And Doug Killian, one of the experts in the industry, is going to tell us.
Now, to answer this question about how you should go about warming up your HD truck, your diesel truck, or any kind of pickup truck, we have one of the guys that is actually responsible for bringing to the market the Ram heavy-duty trucks. And actually, Doug, you work on not just the HD trucks, but you work on several other Ram truck models as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. I basically do vehicle development for all of our Ram trucks and frankly frame-based products that we have at Stellantis here, which by and large is Ram, but we do have a few Jeeps that are body on frame.
So you're the guy to talk to about this subject because there's definitely obviously a lot of research and development that you guys do on your end to figure out durability, wear, everything, and correct operation on these vehicles. Mm-hmm. And right now, being that we're kind of in the thick of the cold weather season, I think this is a question that's worth tackling with some actual expert feedback. So the basic question that we have, and we want to start out talking about specifically diesel HD trucks, and we can kind of expand to other gas-powered trucks from there. But specifically, if you have a brand new HD diesel truck, what would you say from your guys' testing and everything that you've experienced is the best way to get it up to temperature?
Okay. Yeah, it's a very good question and a pretty common question. You know, we're based in Michigan. We get a lot of cold weather. Yeah. And it's a, I think it's generally a concern, particularly when I look at a heavy-duty truck customer, durability and keeping their equipment operating in the most healthy way, so to speak, is paramount. And if they can do something to squeeze more life, just treat their equipment better, they want to know it. So one thing we certainly will say with cold weather operation, especially extreme cold, is that using a diesel front cover, that, you know, that vinyl front cover that we engineer specifically to our grills, we cover our lower openings along with the main portion of the grill, is one very easy step. Set it up. Frankly, when I'm driving a diesel truck, I usually, right around Thanksgiving is when I put my diesel front cover on. And then as March rolls through, it's like, that's when it comes off. So when temperatures are steadily below freezing, it's a great idea to run that diesel front cover. That's going to really help get warm up to happen the fastest. And we typically engineer into our own. We have some pockets that we design in, so you can get more airflow. If you have a warmer day, you don't have to go through the whole process of taking on that diesel front. Just open up a couple of the windows, and unless you're towing or it's an exceptionally warm day, or I should say, heavy towing on a very warm day is when you may have to rethink that the windows won't be able to keep up. So that's point number one that you can set up and a bit of set it and forget it for the entire season. Number two on diesels in particular, now that we have our new Cummins 6.7 turbo diesel, we do have glow plugs on that engine now. In former years, have had a grid heater. It's important to just wait that couple of seconds. Glow plugs are only going to take about 3 seconds now. It's pretty much negligible. Whereas when we did the grid heater, there was that waiting time. And of course, the truck doesn't even, you have to kind of push through if you were to force a start. We would recommend not pushing through the grid heater on the previous Rams that are out there. And frankly, on the glow plugs, just letting them do their thing for a couple of seconds gets that initial charge for the initial combustion to happen. And get things going properly. So that's a pretty easy one.
And I know it's going to depend a little bit on the particular truck, but is there a certain temperature range that you would recommend putting a cover on the front grill below any specific number?
When it's consistently below freezing.
Okay.
Yep. Below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 Celsius, consistently. So it's going to be one of those things that it'll warm up a little bit faster, particularly if you start getting that cold air behind the grill. The engine's going to take a little longer to get warmed up. So that's really, like I said, here in Michigan, typically we're starting to see those consistent temperatures below freezing even during the day, around late November, early December. So again, it's like for me, personal thing, I usually do it on the Thanksgiving weekends, just one of those boxes I check.
Nice. And then the other thing that I've seen a little bit of back and forth on, if you look around the conventional wisdom, I've heard and what I was raised on is that you should generally warm up your vehicle by driving it gingerly so that it gets up to temperature more quickly than letting it sit and idle in place for any extended period of time. From the testing that you all do, is there a specific amount of time that you would recommend idling, or would you say once it's up and running, you're pretty much good to start driving? Again, factoring in and being cautious of the fact that it's not up to temperature yet.
Yes, yeah. So that wisdom that you're hearing that's kind of passed down from generations is spot on, is that starting a vehicle and letting it idle will cause it to warm up more slowly, and that is not good for the engine. And the reason for that is, as you're getting that cold combustion and there's some some blow-by gases, there's some condensation still happening from the in the oil itself, is that when you actually see water in the oil, it has this emulsification type of appearance to it. In fact, one of the just proverbial terms is it looks like mayonnaise. That cold oil that's flowing through an engine has this white appearance to it. So we'll see that if we've had, and this is going back a number of years, but we had Lexan oil pan that you could actually see the oil flowing get picked up in the sump by the oil pickup. Yeah. And then you see it coming back down into the crankcase. And you're literally seeing like the whole crankcase just turns this like milky white, like I said, looks like mayonnaise. And that oil in that state does not have good properties for lubricity. Also in terms of acidity and the characteristics of the oil that are desirable for cooling and lubricating are essentially really compromised at that point. So that will still happen. But if you continue to run that and you're running cold oil and you're not burning off and getting the oil up to temperature where it regains those properties, it's leading to longer term wear on the journal bearings and in the base of the engine.
Yeah, so it sounds like it is then generally more beneficial to get the vehicle moving sooner rather than later versus letting it sit and idle for 10 minutes, say, before you start driving. And then would you say that there's any major differences between gas and diesel, say, because we're kind of initially talking about HD diesels, about Cummins powered Rams, but this information, of course, extends to other trucks. But outside of the diesel world, if you're looking at maybe a Ram 1500 with a Hurricane inline six or an older Ram with a Hemi or another brand's truck, would you treat it the same way or any differences in how you would go about warming up?
It's really the same way. Obviously, the front cover, the cold winter front, is different, is unique to a diesel, but that same method of, you know, oil circulating, oil not having the optimal properties when it's cold. So you want to minimize the amount of time that it's cold. Same applies to diesel and gas together. Driving it gingerly, to use your term there, is the right way. And of course, we're talking new trucks and our, you know, when we fire them up, the combustion stability is there. You really can just key up and go. And we test down to negative 40. We do have some criteria. We give it a couple more seconds to start until, or at least to the point where we are comfortable and have passed our internal testing at minus 40. But for the practical user, the difference between a half a second crank and a 2.5-3 second crank at, again, negative 40 is almost inconsequential. And then we have combustion stability right away.
And would you say that also using a block heater, if you have that on your truck, I would assume that also makes a pretty substantial difference?
It does, yeah, for sure. The both gas and diesel block heaters being available on both, it's a wise choice to not only use the block heater, but to put the truck up against a garage door, or even minimizing the amount of wind that can get through. That will be essentially cooling down if you park a hot truck. If you can minimize the amount of wind through there, it'll retain some of its heat longer. And again, it's getting back to that, keeping the oil at its optimal lubricity and having its optimal properties. And so that's another wise thing to do is just, you know, tuck it up a little bit tighter against, say, the garage door or the wall or wherever you park, if you can.
And it does seem that in general, at least from what we've seen, modern oils do seem to be a lot better at maintaining a certain viscosity and having certain lubricating qualities, even when that oil is pretty cold versus maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago when those oils didn't have the same additives that they do. I don't know if you guys probably don't have off the top of your head any metrics or numbers, but would you say that a modern synthetic oil versus a conventional oil, is there a substantial difference there as well?
Yeah, certainly the oil companies that we partner with and we develop alongside them, they know where our engines are. We're working together and they're constantly evolving their friction modifiers, their cold weather, maintaining cold weather properties as they do their chemical research. So we're essentially all automakers are going along and seeing that benefit that that the oil companies are doing with their motor oils.
Nice. And then let me double check. I know Andre had a little bit of a list. Oh, yeah. One other thing that I know Andre was wondering about is what about transmission warm-up? Because obviously that's primarily going to be through driving. So would you say that's maybe another disadvantage of letting a vehicle sit in idle versus driving it, is that your transmission is also not going to get up to temperature as quickly?
Exactly. Yeah, that's another very good point that Andre brought up, is that movement of the transmission and the shearing of the fluid quickly gets transmission oil up to temperature. And it doesn't have the same sort of ill effects that we would see from the combustion that's happening up in the cylinders that can get that, again, that like emulsification of the oil. Now, of course, there can be condensation just from the temperature change that's happening, even in a sealed transmission. And again, same principle applies. The more that, if you can get that oil heating up faster, it's achieving its, in the transmission case, the hydraulic properties and maintaining hydraulic pressure to keep plates, clutch plates and clutch bands and so on engaged.
Right.
So yeah, getting the transmission moving at that gingerly pace, driving a lot of torque through it, can be detrimental. So it's not more of a good thing. It's that sweet spot of drive it gingerly, but get it moving.
Yeah, because exactly. It's a good point to bring up that you probably don't want to fire up your truck if it's hooked to the maximum that is rated to tow and start immediately pulling up a steep hill at full throttle. Not a good idea.
Right. Walk it around a little bit, through the yard or through the streets to get it up to temperature before you really start maximizing the torque through there, both on the transmission and the engine side. It's going to require that engine, the lubricity from the oil is going to be much more needed in those severe duty environments. The more torque that's on it, the more loads that are on the crankshaft, the more loads that are going through the transmission, the oil's got to be at the, in its prime operating condition.
Now, I've also seen online a few comparisons of how oil ages as it gets through its lifespan. So brand new, fresh, out of the bottle oil versus oil that has 7,500, even 10,000 miles on it. And it seems like the more degraded that oil gets when it's cold, it's got even fewer of those lubricating properties. Let me get this light. There we go. It's a motion activated light, which is always good for podcasts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But so it seems like when that oil gets older and it gets degraded, when the oil is cold, it also doesn't have quite the same lubricating and viscosity properties that it had when it was cold, but it was fresher oil. So would you say that's also a big factor for wear on motors, is especially in cold temperatures, making sure that you've got fresh, not such degraded oil?
Yeah, that certainly helps. If it's a bit of a question of, hey, do I change my oil now before the cold weather season? If there's a few hundred miles left, there's a judgment call there. But I will say that the oil change interval that we'll have on our oil change indicator on the truck is going to be more than the oil change company is going to say. So typically we hear the proverbial 3 months, 3,600 miles, 3 months, 3,000 miles, that sort of thing. That's a bit of overkill.
Yeah.
We'll find that our research, which then drives the oil change indicator on the cluster, which is then looking at the number of starts, the number of miles, the number of hours. It's an algorithm that then will guide that oil change interval to an earlier or later point, depending on the usage. So I will say there's a point there. If you go beyond that, we certainly are, that's where it can get a bit risky. And then even doubling down on that risk in the cold weather because of the further degraded properties that the cold weather brings, and particularly water, and water being the bad guy in that situation, that needs to be burned off in a sense.
And is a lot of that water coming into the oil from heat cycles more so than necessarily how many miles? Like if a hotshot driver is driving 1,000 miles in a day often, I would assume that he's not going to likely get as much water in his oil as somebody who drives 20 miles a day, and you're having a lot more heat cycles per the amount of miles you're doing in between those oil changes?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The longer the oil can be at temp, the more it's going to stabilize back to that to those optimal properties. So it's really that those short cycles, what we call a granny cycle, those are particularly tough because it's the, you know, the granny takes the car out, goes to the grocery store, comes home, and the engine never warms up.
Yeah.
And then when we put that sort of usage on a diesel, which has a after-treatment system, which these systems tend to have an operating point that's higher, around 100 degrees C on the coolant side, those systems operate much better when they can warm up and stay warm. So that's even a bit of advice to some, hey, I'm just going to move the truck in the driveway. I'm going to move it out of the way. I'm going to move it from the street to the driveway, is don't start it right up and turn it right off, because then we have combustion gases that are still a bit sooty. They're not optimal for, you know, for that just to sit in that environment. And some water will be introduced then from the temperature differential that we see just from condensation that can happen from any latent air that's through the, say, the crankcase ventilation.
Yeah.
So to start an engine, let it warm up and then turn it off.
So even if you just have to move your truck, it could be 10 feet, but you have to start it up to do that. Probably not going to push a brand new Cummins because there's not a light truck.
Right.
So
right.
If you're just starting it up briefly, then to let it run afterwards. So like you said, it gets up to temperature. I mean, in an ideal world, like what we're saying, drive it around for a little bit, but is there kind of a window of time? I guess that would be a window of time to say, let it continue to run for would be a difficult thing to pin down, because hot day versus a cold day, that the amount of time it's going to take for it to get up to temperature is going to be very different.
Yeah, it's going to take a while. And we're, you know, getting back to the question, and we're really saying it's not going to be a problem if you do. If you do, you know, say on cold nights, start it up, shut it down. I mean, we do a lot of short driving. Yeah. We do this granny cycle is literally what we call it here. And we do these very short abusive cycles. The customer doesn't know they're being abusive to the truck, but it happens. So we've fully validated our truck to those conditions. But if somebody's looking to really, really get the most out of the truck and do the best thing, it's maybe thinking ahead of like, hey, maybe I just put the truck in the driveway first and not leave it in the street and do that short start later.
Yeah.
Or hey, I'll take it out somewhere, then I'll park it. It's just a little bit of that forethought is going an extra level that only makes things last longer and better. But rest assured, we certainly at Ram and with our partners at Cummins we do the most abusive cycles, such that should never be a problem for anyone.
But it is still a good thing to know, because obviously a brand new truck is a big investment. And so if you're doing something even unknowingly that qualifies as abuse, it's maybe something that's worth knowing about. So yeah, ideally those short startup and shutdown cycles are not the best thing that you can do for your motor in the long run, even though, the modern trucks especially, we're always amazed because we're up here in Colorado, and so we also get some pretty cold days. And my 1994 12 valve Cummins has, you know, it always fires up, but you can certainly tell that it's not as happy to be woken up when it's 10 degrees outside and you're asking it to fire up and run, versus the Ram 2500 that we've had for the last couple of years, or the new Duramax that we bought, or really any of the modern diesels on the market. You get in on the coldest day in the past 5 years, hit the start button, it fires up, and there's really not any detectable difference in how it sounds like it's running and how it feels like it's running than if it were just a regular 65, 70 degree day here in the summer. So it's right. Impressive.
Yeah. It's something that for older vehicles, if there's that point of like, you want to have the combustion stability. So if the truck's hesitating, or, you know, if it's idling roughly, then it's not wise to just put it in gear and go, you know, put yourself in a bad situation.
Yeah.
But certainly on newer trucks. So there's a little bit of a caveat, I guess, to folks that drive. If it takes a moment for the, like you say, hard to wake up, I know the feeling.
Yeah.
You know, just get to the point where you're confident to get up and go and drive away, and not put the truck or yourself in a position where there could be a problem if it's not if it's not running in a stable manner.
So we've talked about a few good list items that people can check off if they want to make sure that they're doing the best for their engine in the cold. So to relist them, you mentioned parking close to the garage, so eliminating a little bit of that wind, using a cover over the grill, using a block heater if you have one, making sure that your oil is relatively fresh within the margins of what's specified by the manufacturer. And also ideally driving, like we said, gingerly to get it up to temperature as quickly as possible rather than letting it sit in idle for a long period of time, as a few things that you can try to do to get the most out of the lifetime of your engine. Is there anything else outside of that list that you would say is potentially good practice with cold starts?
Yeah. So there was clearly, you know, good kind of checklist there. And I think just maybe from the transmission side, as that cold transmission fluid has to build up pressure to engage gear, is to just pay attention if your first move is to put the truck in reverse, is to feel the truck engage reverse. Sometimes that can take a little bit longer. So what you want to avoid is kind of a shift and hit it. Mm-hmm. And if the pressure hasn't built up, then it's slipping clutches perhaps, that are not fully engaged. And then you can get a heavy clunk out of it and some impulse type loads that are really not good for the transmission. So that's maybe the last one, is when you do finally start it up and you know you're going to go drive gingerly, have that feeling that you're in gear. It should be pretty obvious, like on your, you know, on your 12 valve Cummins. You can feel the truck set into gear before you put your foot on the gas.
So yeah.
Maybe the last little tip that we feel, especially when we're testing these at extreme cold weather, is the transmission takes just a moment to build up its pressure.
Perfect. Well, thank you for your time. This is all really good information for people to have. And it's always great to get to talk to somebody that's actually directly involved in testing and engineering these trucks, because that's the kind of information and feedback that we value a ton. So thank you again, Doug, for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, sure thing. Glad to have the conversation and, you know, looking forward to future.
You know what? Putting a case and Doug together in that interview, I think was one of the best things ever.
I learned so much, Andre.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to keep a truck alive.
Well, first of all, Case is a Cummins owner.
Yeah.
He's talking about to the guy who's releasing a brand new Cummins truck. So they had a lot in common, and I learned a heck of a lot too.
Yeah. So thank you to Ram for that interview. And thanks to Case for taking the time to speak with Doug. So,
yeah.
You know, guys,
so now you know.
Now you know. You heard it first on TFL.
So when your neighbor comes up to you and says, you have to let your Cummins idle for 20 minutes before you drive it, now you can say, Doug said no. Don't do it.
My neighbor would say, shut that loud thing off. It's smelling up the neighborhood.
Don't do it.
Especially if it was deleted. All right, guys. Well, you've spent another hour. I was going to do the car talk thing where you wasted another hour, but yeah, I don't think you wasted it.
No, I don't think we wasted it.
I appreciate you spending it with Andre and myself. And if you want to see some of the videos that we've talked about, where should they go, Andre?
OldTFL.com. And if you're wondering where Case is now, he's actually test riding most new Harleys.
Yeah.
Harley-Davidson.
Yeah, so. he's got a lot of bike videos coming because he's running the bike channel as well. And we will see you next time. Ciao.
Thank you.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most. Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.